Welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 FM KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Dan Yassin and I'm a local anti-war and anti-empire activist. Mike Rhodes is at the controls. Today is July 19th, 2017, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday, I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military, industrial, congressional, security complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the American people, but also for the people in other countries. To create a better, humane and a compassionate world, we must first always understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Steve Lenman on telephone with us. Hello, Steve.
Dan, it's good to be with you again.
It's good to have you on the show. Steve Lenman is an author, blogger, and internet radio host. He was born in Boston, received a BA from Harvard University, followed by 2 years service in the U.S. Army, and then an MBA in 1960 from Wharton Business School at University of Pennsylvania. After being part of family business for over 30 years, he retired in 1999. After retirement, he decided to devote his time to progressive causes, extensive reading, and since summer of 2005, writing on vital world and national topics, including war and peace, American imperialism, corporate dominance, political persecutions, and a range of other social, economic, and political issues. Lenman also hosts the Progressive Radio News Hour on the Progressive Radio Network 3 times weekly. Lenman is a 2008 Project Censored winner and 2011 Mexican Journalist Club International Journalism Award. He has authored 4 books. His latest book is How Wall Street Fleeces America: Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class War. His website is www.StephenLenman.org. Steve, I believe the situation in Korean Peninsula is approaching flashpoint. Trump's belligerence can bring about an unthinkable nuclear confrontation. Let's start there. A couple of days ago, South Korea offered military-level talks with North Korea to de-escalate the tension in the Korean Peninsula. You wrote that Russia, China, North Korea, and South Korea want to solve the problem through diplomacy. Only obstacle is Washington. Give us an overview of the escalating crisis.
Well, it really is a shocking situation, Dan. North Korea, which came into existence after World War II, when the Korean Peninsula was divided, it never should have happened. Same thing happened to Vietnam, and that was reunified after America pulled out in 1975. But the two Koreas still exist, and there's a very, very hostile DMZ that separates both countries. Most South Korean presidents have been very hostile to the North, taking orders from Washington, saluting and obeying. And there have been a couple of presidents that have been the opposite. A previous one, in the 1990s, I forget the exact time frame, in the 1990s, instituted what he called the Sunshine Policy, really talking with the North, establishing a relationship, which is the only way to avoid conflict. And the new president, he's only been in office a short number of months, Moon Jae-un, I believe his name is. It's either Un or In. The Korean names can be hard for an American to remember, but he's known as Moon. He definitely wants a sunshine policy with the North. He prefers diplomacy and outreach to the belligerents that America favors. It really is shocking. North Korea is a nuclear power. The idea of America going to war with North Korea could end up with a nuclear war on the peninsula, which would be a regional disaster, to say the least. It would affect all the regional countries in the area, North, South Korea, Russia, China, Japan. I can't imagine why any country in the region would ever go along with America's belligerent policy, but they do. Not Russia and China, of course, and not South Korea. South Korea, I think, wants to have good relations with Washington, Dan. It very definitely does not want a war, and I think President Moon will go out of his way to try to avoid any belligerence, but of course he has no say on what goes on in Washington. The problem with the Trump administration is it's so neocon-infested, these war hawks that simply want endless wars of aggression. I'm convinced that Trump is going to pick a target to begin a new war with. He's continuing with all the Bush-Cheney-Obama wars, and I think he wants to pick another target for another war, and the prime targets would either be North Korea or Iran. Either one would be a disaster.
We are coming up to the 64th anniversary of the Armistice Agreement that was signed in 53 and that stopped the Korean War, as you mentioned, North Korea has been around since post-World War II. And during that period, North Korea has not attacked any country and threatens none. And the acquisition of bomb that they got, in 2006, and their continued experimentation with missile, is it for defensive purposes? Because, as you said, that it's the U.S. militarization of the Korean Peninsula and Japan since during the last 60 years is what threatens North Korea. So they are within their right to do that. And now Trump administration is applying pressure on China to do something about North Korea. And you wrote an article about China's reaction to that. Tell us about that.
Well, China and Russia both want diplomatic outreach, Dan. The only sensible approach in bilateral relations with any country. They want a cessation of the annual South Korea-U.S. Military exercises that Pyongyang views as preparation for war on its country. And if I was the leader of North Korea, I would feel exactly the same way. And you said it exactly right, Dan. The only reason North Korea has developed a nuclear and ballistic missile program is for defense, because it is very scared there can be a repeat of what happened in the early 1950s, where the country was literally leveled and U.S. bombers ran out of targets to strike. It was that bad, with maybe 3 or 4 million North Koreans killed in that war. It's shocking to think about that. I don't remember the population of the country back then, smaller than it is today, of course. But to have that number of people killed, a significant percentage of their population was killed by U.S. imperialism, and the North did not attack the South. The South, at the behest of Harry Truman, attacked the North, and after repeated provocations, the North finally responded, which is its right under international law. But you'll never hear the history told that way. So here we are, all these years later, all these decades, we have a belligerent president in Washington, and we have a serious risk of another war on the peninsula, which could be a nuclear war. And again, Dan, as we know, that would be an utter disaster with all losers and no winners. The difference for Washington is it's far away and there'll be no nuclear bombs dropped on U.S. territory. But the region will get the fallout of that, including the major powers there, which is why Russia and China very, very much want peaceful negotiations and an end of U.S. belligerence.
Some analysts believe that North Korea crisis is an excuse to install THAAD anti-ABM batteries in South Korea to prevent China from retaliating against a U.S. nuclear attack on China. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. These THAAD missiles are really more for offense than defense. Their radars penetrate deeply into Russian and Chinese territory. to give America advance warning. If America attacked those countries, America would have advance warning of anything they might want to do, either preemptively or in retaliation. There'd be nothing preemptively because Russia and China don't attack other countries. The Russian Federation has not ever attacked another country. I can't remember the last time China had a war with another country. Maybe a few skirmishes here or there, but certainly not a war, especially in the post-World War II era. And as we know, Dan, America wages aggressive wars all the time against one country after another. So America is the aggressor, and it blames other countries for its high crimes. It's a terrible situation, and sooner or later, well, I wrote some time ago what the father of America's nuclear navy told to the U.S. Congress in the 1980s, I think the early 1980s. He explained that when nations go to war with each other, they will use whatever weapons they have to win. It doesn't mean they would use nuclear weapons if they don't need to use them, if they have them. But if that's what it takes to win, they would use nuclear weapons. And I don't recall, Hyman Rickover was the admiral. I don't recall his exact words, but I think basically he said something to the effect, this would be absolute insanity and there's no possibility anybody could win a war like that.
You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 FM. KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with Steve Landman, an author, blogger, and an internet radio host. Let's look at mainstream media's role during last year. First came denigrating of Trump as soon as he won the Republican nomination, followed by Russia bashing after DNC and John Podesta emails were leaked by WikiLeaks. And after the November election, we got Trump-Russia collision and demonizing of Putin. It's nonstop. You have written about it. Tell us about your article that you wrote, Disgraceful New York Times Russia Bashing.
You know, Dan, I read so many articles, I can't remember what I said in each one individually. But on this particular topic, I wrote so many articles over so many previous months, all through the Trump administration during the campaign last year. I think I wrote enough articles, Dan, to fill a book on this topic. Yep. I ought to put it all together and just have a folio of all these articles put together. But the facts are completely ignored by the media I call scoundrel media or media scoundrels. And my favorite target is the New York Times. They publish absolute trash, bashing Russia gratuitously, bashing Trump gratuitously, instead of criticizing what deserves criticizing. Of his policies, like his imperial wars, which they never talk about. They bash him for the wrong reasons. They invent stuff. The latest that I wrote about today was saying Putin and Trump had an undisclosed meeting at the G20 in Hamburg. Well, there was no undisclosed meeting, second meeting. We know about the first one that lasted 90 minutes or 2 hours or so. There was no second one. What there was a dinner held by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and all of the G20 leaders and their wives were at that meeting. Trump's wife, Melania, sat next to Putin. The only way they could converse would be through a translator, and there was one there, a Russian translator, who spoke English. And Putin was seated between the Argentinian and the, who's the other one? The wives of the Argentinian president and I forget the other president, one of the other ones. He wasn't seated next to Putin. But at one point during the dinner, Trump made the rounds to say hello to a number of foreign leaders. And because his wife was sitting next to Putin, he walked over to the table and they exchanged more words. You wouldn't call this a meeting, Dan. This was simply an exchange of pleasantries that didn't last very long. In my article today, Dan, I quoted a long White House statement, which often I would be more apt to criticize than accept, but I accept this one. There was nothing to a second media, but the New York Times, not just the New York Times, I use that as an example, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Reuters, a whole bunch of other U.S. media, made a big deal out of this non-existent second meeting between Putin and Trump. This is the way they gratuitously bash Russia and Trump. It really is a disgrace. The Russia bashing goes back decades, actually for the past century, since the Russian Revolution, and especially it's been hostile in the post 9/11 era, and especially in that era with Bush Cheney and Obama, and now Trump. Whatever he may want to do in terms of improving better relations, and I suspect that he would rather have relations better than they are now, but he's completely foiled by the actions of the media, by the actions of practically every member of Congress, Republicans and Democrats. I doubt, I haven't really checked, but I would doubt there is a single member of Congress who would say anything positive about Russia and talk about wanting better bilateral relations between America and Moscow. I don't think you'd find a single member of Congress, not a House member, not a Senate member. So what could Trump do? There's nothing he can do in the face of this. So whatever they talked about privately in Hamburg at the G20, we know what they said. Trump didn't say very much at all about that meeting. Putin said a little bit more about it. In 2 hours, you can cover, certainly don't cover all issues, but you could cover a number of things of importance. You can imagine the important issues they talked about, Syria and Ukraine and U.S.-Russia relations and so on. According to Putin, nothing about lifting sanctions was discussed. Whether they were or not, who knows and who cares? They never should have been imposed in the first place. But the bashing, Dan, as we know, is absolutely reprehensible. It goes on virtually every day. The meeting between Trump Jr. and the Russian lawyer, who has nothing to do with the Kremlin, and an ex-Russian service member during the Soviet era, who happened to be in a counterintelligence unit. I can't remember his name without looking at it and reading it on a piece of paper. And the Russian lawyer has a hard-to-pronounce last name. Natalia is her first name. Rimrad, I think, is the first name of the other Russian operative. There was nothing nefarious, illegal, improper about this meeting. It was probably foolish that it happened in the first place, but it did. It was fairly short, about 20 minutes. There was nothing of any significance concluded in the meeting. There was no dirt on Hillary presented by these people. What they really had in mind was talking about the Magnitsky Act, which is an act hostile to Russia, targeting Russia officials for alleged human rights abuses and other things improperly. And that's what it really was all about, not about any information to relay about Hillary. But it was a waste, but the U.S. media has made literally a mountain out of nothing whatsoever. I think a quote from Sergei Lavrov was, it made a mountain out of a fly. That's exactly what, a mountain out of a fly. I think a mountain out of nothing is even more appropriate. But this stuff, Dan, as we know, goes on every day. It's relentless. It's endless. I don't know how it will end. The hostility is so deep, and the media and members of Congress are so hell-bent on preventing Trump from improving relations with Russia in any way that this thing will probably go on as long as Trump sits in the Oval Office.
Well, talking about the end, so you had quoted this poll, and I looked it up also. After a year of anti-Trump, anti-Russia, and anti-Putin propaganda, it turns out it's not working. And according to that Harvard-Harris poll released by The Hill last month, a majority of voters believe the Russia investigation are damaging to the country, and the people are eager to see Congress shift its focus to healthcare, terrorism, national security, the economy, and jobs. 64% said the ongoing probes are harmful to the country. 56% said the investigation have runs their course and that it is time to move on to the pressing needs. Steve, do you think maybe this is the beginning to end of this?
I would love to say maybe it is, Dan, but I must say very honestly, I don't think so at all. It simply doesn't matter what polls say, what anybody says. These people do what they want to do. When the CBO score came back on I think both the House and the Senate versions and the revised versions, the comments out of the Trump administration, which is coming from them as opposed from another source on a different topic, but the comments by the Trump administration on the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, they just discounted them completely, saying, oh, they're never accurate. Things never turn out the way the CBO says they will. So that what that really shows is it doesn't really matter what polls show, what anybody says, what anybody thinks. These people in Washington are going to do what they want to do. They want to bash Trump. They want to bash Russia. They really would like to get rid of Trump and replace him with what I call a puppet in waiting in the shoes of Mike Pence, the vice president. I think that's what they really want. He's a much more easily controllable person, and I think they would love to see him sitting in the Oval Office. He would obey everything they asked him to do.
Some of us still remember U.S. military's Fallujah slaughter in 2004. After what happened in Mosul recently, Amnesty International issued a report on recent killing and tortures of civilians in Mosul. Now U.S. military is targeting Raqqa, and we are about to see the repeat of the same treatment to the people of Raqqa. Tell us about these slaughters, and is this how America conducts its wars?
Again, it's shocking, Dan. The information Amnesty put out is fine because they got something out, but I think they grossly underestimated the human slaughter. Nobody knows the exact numbers. I think most bodies, or at least many bodies, are buried under rubble. It could take months to discover them, and who knows what shape they'd be in when they came out. So no one will ever know the toll in Mosul, the toll in Raqqa. The only difference between Raqqa and Mosul, Mosul was a city of 1.7 million people when the conflict began there last October, the so-called liberating conflict, which wasn't a liberating one at all. It was a campaign to destroy the city, to rape it and destroy the city. I believe possibly as many as tens of thousands of civilians were massacred. Raqqa is not a small city, but smaller than Mosul. I don't know what the population was before the America got involved again in a so-called liberating campaign. I had written that an estimated 70,000 civilians still remain there, and maybe a couple of hundred thousand have managed to get out to some other place where I'm not certain. So maybe there were 200,000 or 300,000 people there as opposed to 1.7 million. So you can see the scale of slaughter in Mosul, which is much more extreme than Raqqa, and Raqqa is still ongoing. But it's the same scheme of indiscriminate, what I call terror bombing, and that's exactly what it is, Dan. It's led by America. You've got some other countries involved. America boasts about a so-called 65-country coalition. That's a lot of baloney. There are a lot of countries that say, oh, yeah, we'll help you out, and maybe they say they do, and they don't do anything at all. But the main belligerents are America. The main aerial belligerents, the bombing, are America, Britain, and France, with America by far doing more than all the other countries put together. And the indiscriminate bombing, I saw an amazing report in, of all places, Dan, the Washington Post. I couldn't believe what I was, and they had pictures to show what they were talking about. It showed areas of Mosul that were bombed before the bombing, when it looked like a normal city, and after the bombing, where everything was leveled and it looked like a moonscape. So you can imagine the number of people that were massacred in that kind of intense bombing. And I was shocked and amazed that the Washington Post would publish a report like this. And I made a comment in my article that maybe the CIA was taking a victory lap, boasting about how powerful America's military is, so that they could do this to anybody. You know, don't tread on us, or we'll do to you what we did to Mosul. Maybe that's what the article was all about. But to look at those images, it would give anybody a real understanding of the severity and intensity of the bombing that took place, far more so than just to put out numbers of what happened or what may have happened. You look at that other devastation, and you know that anybody in that area was killed. There was no way to survive there because there was nothing left standing.
Yep. America has always been at war. We just celebrated 241st Independence Day. Out of 241 years, we have been at war for 220 years. We are a threat to world peace. It's not North Korea, Iran, Russia, or China that are threatening us. It's the United States that the world has to worry about. Belligerence toward North Korea and Iran, pressure on China, and fierce hostility toward Russia. Steve, I am worried. Where are we headed?
I'm afraid we're on a path toward eventual nuclear war, Dan. It's really disturbing to say anything like this, but it seems we're going in that direction. The ultimate targets for America are Russia and China. Regime change against those countries. They're both nuclear powers. They both have powerful militaries, and yet America wants regime change in both of them. They're the main obstacles to U.S. global hegemony. The only way America can achieve this, which is its ultimate aim, is by eliminating the threat of these countries, that is, the threat to challenge America's seeking global dominance. So you have to remove that threat. I think ideally America would like to do it by color revolutions. If that doesn't work, the other alternative is war. And if it's war, as Hyman Rickover once said, it would be a nuclear war. And if that happens, Dan, I fear we're all doomed.
We are. I mean, there is no escaping nuclear holocaust, and it is not like all the wars that U.S. had. Most of them since 1865 have been fought over there, but the World War III will be fought all over. Steve, we just have about a minute or so, so just give us your website again and how people can get your books.
You know, my website is Stephen Lendman, L-E-N-D-M-A-N, Stephen with a P-H-E-N, .org. I had a blog. I now have a website. All my articles are there. There are new ones every day, and readers can go to the site and access any articles I've written in the past. There are quite a few of them through my archives, and they can send me a comment. And if they do, if they send me a comment through my site, it goes right to my inbox on my homepage. Anybody who emails me, I'm very happy to answer them.
Thank you so much for being my guest on the show. Until next time.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 FM KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We were speaking with author, blogger, and internet radio host Steve Lendman. Thank you for listening. I'll be back third Wednesday of next month.